Welcome everyone to lesson number 5, reincarnation. The reason that Rabbi Yossi asked me to give the class is that his father-in-law, the father of Esti, needs a very big blessing for a speedy and complete recovery. And so may God Almighty grant that blessing, that he should have a miraculous recovery immediately and completely. And our study tonight is in his merit. His name is Alter Chaim Ben Bela. So if you'd like to make mishaberachs and to say brachas for him, his name is Alter Chaim Ben Bela. I would like for you to go to page 174. And we're going to read this piece over here. I don't know if you prefer not to read, of course you don't need to, but we'll just go around the room and everyone who would like to read, please read. So Lou, would you read that piece?
Have I been here before? This chapter will explore a concept.
Oh, I'm sorry, hold on. Wait, one second. I'm sorry, I'm not used to. I would like to ask everyone to please rise. We'll say the blessing for the study of Torah, if you haven't done it already today. Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Asher Baruch Rabbanu Mikol Ha'amim Nasan Lano Es Toraso Baruch Ata Adonai Nesein HaTorah. Cover your eyes. Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso L'olam Vod. Please be seated. All right, here we go.
Okay.
All right, Lou.
Have I been here before? This chapter will explore a concept that fascinated the ancients, just as it remains highly intriguing today. Reincarnation, or in Hebrew, Gilgul. Simply put, it is the mystical concept that a soul that once lived in a body can be returned to this world to inhabit a second body and live a second lifetime. Not surprisingly, for such an ethereal and for some spooky subject, the idea of reincarnation has itself been reincarnated repeatedly through multiple religions and superstitions. What is the unique Jewish mystical tradition on reincarnation? Can we come back? Must we come back? Why? How? For the sake of clarity, it is necessary to first examine currently held ideas or intuitions about social soul reincarnation.
Okay, tell me, what do you think about it? Have you been here before? Do you think it's wild?
I don't know.
You think it's strange? Are you comfortable with it?
I have some questions about if we have an individual soul and that soul, after we pass, returns to God, if it can be reinserted, to use that word, in another body.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. Last week we learned about heaven and hell passing from this world, transitioning to what is either a reward or a rehabilitation. So then what role would reincarnation have?
Revisit to get some things right we hadn't gotten right the first time.
Okay, that's very interesting. Would you be disturbed knowing that some of the people who you have close association with were here in a previous lifetime with you?
Well, can I ask a question? Is reincarnation the resurrection of a body? Is reincarnation the use of a pre-existing soul in a second body?
We're gonna speak on that very directly. So to move a little further on this discussion, please go to page 175 and circle T or F, true or false, for each of these seven items, please. How are we doing? All right. So we're going to come back to this. We're going to re-examine what you've written and try to come to some understanding after we've gone through this whole lesson. So in text number one, this is an outstanding text. This is in our prayer book. It's been there for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. It's in fact in every prayer book, or Ashkenaz, Sfarad, Hasidic, Persian, all these different prayer books. And it said, read for us, please, text number one.
Master of the universe, I hereby forgive anyone who has angered or vexed me or sinned against me, either physically or financially, against my honor or anything else that is mine, whether accidentally or intentionally, or deliberately, by speech or by deed, in this incarnation or in any other.
When is this prayer said?
It says before retiring at night, before going to sleep.
Right. Every night before going to sleep, we forgive those who may have caused us anguish, it vexed us in any way, insulted us in any way. Now, if we think about that very, very well, we will go to sleep with a very composed heart, not aggravated by anybody or anything. Is that all that this is? Why do we have to mention in this incarnation or another? Very, very interesting. So this whole course has been based on a singular trend and focus, which is to bring what the Torah says to authentic Torah sources for all of our discussions. I'm sorry, I just saw the text. Yeah. Authentic Torah sources for all of our discussion of Journey of the Soul. In other words, this is not someone's personal philosophy. Much of it comes from the Kabbalah. The word Kabbalah means tradition that was received from a previous generation, from previous generation, all the back way back to Moses and Mount Sinai. So on page 177, Deborah, would you like to read the many lives of the soul?
You want me to read number two or the branches of a soul?
Please, number two.
Excuse me. Anyone hoping to shed light on the genuine Jewish perspective of the purpose and function of reincarnation must first turn to the teachings of the 16th century master Kabbalist Rabbi Yitzhak Luria, universally accepted as the preeminent authority on the matter. His teachings were transcribed by a student, Rabbi Chaim Vital. The first step of this journey is to explore the fascinating evolution of souls and their universal mission.
Excellent. So the Arizal, who was the preeminent Kabbalistic sage in the city of Tzfas, and if any of you go to visit the city of Tzfas, hopefully we'll be able to travel very soon. With good health. We have a son and a daughter-in-law and children, grandchildren who live there. So in the center of the city is a very mystical area. And you can see the synagogue of the Arizal. In fact, there's two. There's an Ashkenaz and there's a Sephardic synagogue. The Arizal was a preeminent scholar of Kabbalah. He had a very famous, he didn't write any of his teachings. His greatest student was Rabbi Chaim Vital, who recorded these teachings. As far as the concept of reincarnation, there's a book called Sefer HaGilgulim, Shar HaGilgulim, Eitz HaChaim. It's written in these places. And he discusses the idea of reincarnation. There is such a concept of reincarnation of non-Jewish souls, but we're going to focus on Jewish souls. So text number two, Linda, would you like to read? This is from that book.
It all began with one master soul, the soul of Adam, which included all future souls. Subsequently, this master soul passed on to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and then was divided among the 12 tribes. Afterward, the soul was further partitioned among the 70 souls, the descendants of Jacob that accompanied him to Egypt, and eventually among 600,000 souls who left Egypt.
Okay, so we started with Adam. He was the one, and it branched out from him through our forefathers, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. From them, it came to the children, the 12 tribes, who went down to Egypt, were very fruitful and multiplied, and it became 600,000 root souls, the men between the ages of 20 up, and their wives are considered a half of their soul, so it's one soul. From those 600,000 then branched out to be all the souls. Okay, so that's where we get the number of souls. Now, In this process, we go back to the book, Shar HaGilgulim. Larry, please read text number three, page 178.
Furthermore, you must know that every person must fulfill all of the 613 mitzvah. If a soul does not fill all 613 mitzvah, in action, speech, and thought, it must be reincarnated until it completes them all.
Okay. I do not know you, so if you know the answer, please tell me. What are thought, speech, and action to a person? I cannot hear you.
Everything they do.
Deborah, you were speaking. I can't hear.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question well enough.
Okay, what are thought, speech, and action to a soul?
Heart, soul, and might.
The way it's described in Kabbalah is you have three garments of soul through which the soul powers express themselves. And those are thought, speech, and action. You have no others. Those are the garments. Just like a person puts on garments, and these garments express the person. If you were to see a great king, but he's swimming, and you would not be too taken by his swimming in a pool. But if you were wearing the royal garments, then right away you would feel a sense of awe for the king. So these three garments are the ways that our soul expresses itself. So there are 613 commandments. Take an example of the commandment of matzah for Passover. Soon we're going to have that dear mitzvah. So when we do that mitzvah, there are three garments that are enclosed in doing the mitzvah. First, we learn about it and think about it. Then we speak about it. Matzah, this matzah that we're eating, al shuma, why? And then we do the act. So every mitzvah of all the 613 mitzvahs has three garments. If you'll ask me, well, what is the mitzvah of learning Torah? What garments are there there?
Oh. Action, speech, and thought.
Thought, there's definitely thought. Is there speech?
Absolutely.
Yes, but what about action?
The action of studying.
The action of speaking it. So there's the speech, but then there's the act of the speech. And so when a person learns Torah, that's why they say the words they're learning. It's not just a quiet, sterile library in the stacks of the University of Texas. You actually say the words you're learning. That fulfills, and the same with prayer, davening. That when a person prays, they should say the words. It's not just think the words. Okay. So he says that what he said was that if a soul did not fulfill all the 613 commandments in the three garments of thought, speech, and action, the soul is reincarnated to come back again. This is complicated. We're going to have to really address it, but we will. We're going to talk about it. So our mission in this world has been, you know, emphasized a few times in the course, is that all the 600,000 root souls at the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai were charged with the mission. And that mission is to make this world a place which reveals the maker, to reveal God. And that's through the mitzvahs. Now, each one of us has our own particular part, which no one else could fulfill. Meaning to say that if a person, it's the Baal Shem Tov taught, that if a person finds himself in a particular place, for example, Houston, Texas, so, you know, and people ask him, well, how did you end up in Texas? You're from California, from New York, from Florida. Well, I came here on a job interview and, but the reality is, a tzaddik, a righteous person, goes to the place where the sparks await his coming to refine them and elevate them. The sparks related to and connected with his soul. The rest of us don't, God arranges reasons that we think those are the reasons that we're there. So this means to say that if you find yourself in a certain place and you have no desire to be there, you're driving on the road and all of a sudden there's a detour and you have to go way out of your way in a place that you completely have as a waste of time and so on and so forth. No, there's a divine reason that your soul came back into this world because there are sparks of godliness waiting in that place for your soul to elevate, and that's why you're here. It's not trivial. Nothing that happens is trivial. So each soul has its unique mission, which cannot be done by anyone else. There's nobody who is dispensable. Now, the Gilgul helped complete the mission. So if a person weren't able to fulfill all of this in the first lifetime, so then comes back again. Now, there's a lot to discuss about that. So we're going to develop this. We're not going to leave you hanging in the air. All right. So now, in addition to the mitzvahs, there's another mission that each root soul has. Okay, for that, I would like to ask, Colin, please read text number 4 on page 178. Yeah, you have to unmute yourself.
You should also realize each individual must study all 4 levels. Each reference to the I refer to by the acronym, the orchard. These are Tesla, Venus, Venus, and Sod, literal illusion, angelic, and mystical. It's necessary for a soul to be reincarnated and repeated.
Okay, this is very deep. So I'm going to show you a video that will help explain this. I'd like to ask everyone to please mute yourself until you're speaking. Those who came later, I would like to, the reason Rabbi Yossi is not giving this class, he asked me to give it. It is dedicated to the merit of his father-in-law, Esti's father, Alter Chaim Ben Bela. We pray together for his speedy and complete recovery, and let us say amen. So the soul comes to back in order to master all 4 layers of Torah study. Let's watch this video.
Human authors express themselves in their works, both directly and subtly, sometimes intentionally, and always subconsciously. When we read a text, we can choose either to read the line.
Oops.
Or to engage in more.
Can everybody hear this?
Okay. Yes.
Okay, good.
Intricate analysis and read between the lines. The divine author of the Torah did something similar, but to an infinitely greater degree. God expressed himself in the text in multiple ways all at once, directly as well as subtly, with plenty of insinuation and a vast hidden layer of the divine subconscious. And he then instructed us to excavate it all. Jewish tradition separates these layers of understanding into 4 categories. The first is Peshat, direct intention, which is derived by examining context and syntax. For example, the Torah begins with the words Bereshis bara Elokim, Es HaShemayim ve'Es HaAretz. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. On the plainest level of Torah understanding, this is a straightforward statement of what happened at the beginning of time. But the simple meaning is not always easy to clarify. Many biblical commentators, most notably Rabbi Shlomo Yitzhaki, the 11th century French scholar known universally as Rashi, devoted their efforts to clarifying the straightforward meaning of the often mysterious biblical texts. Our second layer of understanding is remes, allusion. This refers to subtle communications that are encoded in the text. They can be uncovered using methods such as the numerical values of the Hebrew letters, the acronyms of words and phrases, or unusually sized letters in the Torah scroll. For example, the Torah's first two words, Bereshis Bara, in the beginning, God created, carry the numerical value of 1,160. That's the identical value of the phrase Barosh Hashanah Nivra. It was created on Rosh Hashanah. We are thereby informed that Rosh Hashanah is the anniversary of creation. Our third layer of understanding is Drush, interpretive. Our sages extrapolate a vast corpus of ideas and instruction from the Torah's text through methods such as textual comparison, sequencing analysis, and homiletical interpretation. For example, from a sequencing perspective, the Torah begins with the wrong beginning. It describes creation, a narrative that is seemingly secondary to the Torah's primary function as a book of guidance that tells us how God expects us to act on a daily basis. The Torah should have dived directly into the nitty-gritty of the laws. On the interpretive level, however, the Torah first describes creation to tackle a major hurdle to Torah observance. The majority of Torah laws rely on the Jewish nation owning and settling the land of Israel. We were instructed to conquer the land and never relinquish our claim of ownership over it. But such a radical claim to a territory is bound to provoke opposition. Who gives us the right to take possession of a land and claim it as our eternal heritage? The Torah, therefore, begins with creation, clarifying that God is the creator of all territories, and he has the right to permanently bequeath a specific parcel to a particular people. It then records the history of God doing precisely that with the Jewish people. With this switch in sequence, the Torah supplies the Jews with the response God expects them to provide all who accuse them of land theft and occupation. The fourth layer of understanding is sod, hidden meaning. This refers to the deeply mystical messages that float behind every phrase and letter in the Torah. For example, the word Bereshis can be split perfectly into two words, bara shis, meaning he created six. God first formed the six emotive divine attributes, from chesed, kindness, through yesod, attachment, as described in Jewish mysticism. God then used these six attributes to create the actual universe. So there you have a sampling of the four layers of understanding that can be found in the Torah's very first words. Beyond this, a vast ocean of knowledge is contained in these same words. And beyond that stretches the infinite vastness of wisdom contained in the rest of the Torah's close to 80,000 words.
Now, what did we just say? So we said that Rabbi Chaim Vital on text number 4 said, each individual must study all four Torah layers referred to by the acronym Pardes, and in order, and it's necessary for a soul to be reincarnated repeatedly until he completes them all. So thus we have the obligation to study the Torah, not just to keep the commandments with thought, speech, and action, our garments of soul, as well to learn the Torah and on all four levels, the pshat, simple meaning, the obvious meaning, the remez, the hints and allusions, the drash, expounding and interpolating, and the sod, which is the mystical secrets. So our soul is here now, according to the Kabbalist, in order to be able to do those things. Now, if we take this just a step further, it means that each one of us has something new to elaborate and discover and teach that wasn't known before. To the point, text number 5a, we say, Joanne, would you like to read? Page 179.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to unmute yourself.
Okay. Sorry about that. May it be your will, O God and God of our fathers, that the holy temple be rebuilt speedily in our days and grant us our portion in your Torah.
Now, we've all said this before so many times. May it be your will to speedily rebuild the temple. But what's his last piece of the phrase? Grant us our portion in your Torah. Well, that's what it is. Our portion is those four sections of the Torah that each one of us must work at to learn and reveal that part which is connected to our soul. Just as when we find ourselves in some detour going a place we would never imagine to go, it's actually for a very spiritual reason. Our soul has come down into this world to connect and reveal in the four sections of the Torah something which is unique to our soul. And so we pray to God, Hashem, grant us our portion. The reason my soul came down into this world in your Torah. And Joanne, you're already there, so read 5b, please. This is from the Lubavitcher Rebbe.
Okay. As explained in numerous sources, the soul of each Jew has a specific segment of the Torah with which it is particularly associated. This explains the phrasing of our sages' statement, grant us our portion in your Torah. Our portion implies that each of us has a unique portion within the Torah. This concept is further expressed in our sages' statement that there are novel Torah concepts that an accomplished student of the Torah is destined to introduce. In other words, the entire universe anticipates the birth of this particular diligent student, awaiting the moment that the student innovates. Meaning uncovers this specific concept within the Torah. For the concept is the student's portion in the Torah.
That's this student's portion. So let me give you an example. Let's say you go to shiur by Esti, a class that Esti is giving, or a class that Rabbi Yossi is giving, and they're bringing up very interesting topics, and you all of a sudden say, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. And you challenge it. Or you bring an insight. Or you tell a story, you know, when I was in this part of the world, I saw something that seems to relate to this. And so you actually may be bringing your soul through that concept, bringing out something in the four levels of Torah interpretation. But that means you have to attend a lot of classes. So make sure you sign up for the next class after this too. But this is something we see every day in our prayers. So reincarnation occurs until we have completed the discovery of the four sections of the Torah that's relevant to our soul. So on page 181, read that also, please, John.
What page?
181, figure 5.1.
Okay. In order to fulfill its mission and gain rectification, each of the 600,000 root souls must fulfill all 613 mitzvot, study the Torah using all four different ways of interpretation, and 3, reveal its own unique part of the Torah.
And so if it hasn't accomplished that in a single lifetime, it comes back reincarnated to complete that. One time, the Maggid, who was the successor to the Baal Shem Tov, asked how this concept of reincarnation applies to the laws of monetary obligations. There's a whole section, there's four sections of the Code of Jewish Law. The last section is all about laws of commerce and damages and things. So he said, go to a certain place in the forest and observe what goes on there. So he saw, the Magad saw that a horseman came, a beautiful steed, and he saw this tree. It was a pleasant place to dismount and rest for a few minutes. And so he took off his money bag from his horse, put it by the tree, and took a little rest. And then he got up and continued on his journey, leaving the money bag there. Shortly after that, a man comes over to the tree, finds the money bag, see that there's no one there. It has no sign, there's no one to announce it to. And so it has the laws of abandoned property, which a person is allowed to take. It's hefker in the laws, in the words of Torah. So it's with, he took that money and he left. Sometime later, not much, a pauper came to the tree, such a nice tree, to just sit down and rest. Meantime, the horseman comes back looking for his pouch with his money. And he sees the pauper over there. He starts screaming at him, "Where's my money?" "I'm sorry, sir, I don't know what you're talking about." And he proceeds to beat him very, 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 very badly. That's the story. So the Magid goes to the Baal Shem Tov and asks him, "Please explain this." So he says the following. In a previous lifetime, the horseman owed the fellow who found the money that exact amount of money, but he did not want to pay him. So the money man to whom the money was owed took him to court. The judge did not look into the case carefully, and he awarded the money to the person who owned it and not to the one who it was owed to. The Baal Shem Tov continued, "It was decreed in heaven that these three should come back to this world. The horseman who owed the money left it by the tree. The man who came to the tree after and found the money was the one to whom that exact amount was owed. And the poor pauper who was beaten was the judge who didn't judge properly in the previous lifetime." So we see that the things that are happening in this world, that we, like it's an atrocity, how could that happen? But there are many layers to it that are not visible to us. So when we see such a thing, so we have to address what our eyes see. We're not privy to that information that the Baal Shem Tov could see. And so we have to apply the laws of justice, the laws of the Torah as they are, and do what's right. But when things happen, we should know that there's much more to the picture. It is not a simple, straightforward, that's what it is. So let's read text, the mechanism of reincarnation. Yutai, would you like to read that? Page
182. Who do you want to read?
Yutai. Yeah.
I don't have the book on me.
You don't have? Okay, so go to Sid. Would you read? Sid.
I can read for you. But I've already read tonight.
No, there's no, it doesn't matter. You're not reading for her, you're reading for all of us.
Okay. Text 6?
No, page 50, number 3, mechanism of reincarnation. Page 182.
The purpose of reincarnation is now a lot clearer, but how does it actually work? What is the mechanism of recycling souls? It is important to note that there are relatively standard forms of reincarnation for the above stated purposes, but there are also several variations of reincarnation, including partial reincarnation, known as Ibur, Ibor, impregnation, and even non-human reincarnation.
Okay. Since you're reading, read please text number 6, page 182. This is again from Shar HaGulgulim, from Rabbi Chaim Vital, a teaching from the Arizal in Tzfas.
Although we've stated in numerous passages in this treatise that specific individual souls were reincarnated in a particular person, it was subsequently reincarnated in another specific individual, and so on. Do not misread this as implying that the original soul itself is reincarnated repeatedly. Rather, each human soul branches out into innumerable roots. Every root contains an infinite quantity of soul sparks. With each subsequent reincarnation, the number of these sparks are recertified, rectified, and they ascend to enjoy the rewards of heaven and dwell in the particular strata of Gan Eden that are appropriate for them.
Okay, so that's saying that a soul is not reincarnated. Sparks of that root soul are reincarnated. That's a different discussion. So my soul wasn't here before. I'm part of a root soul. That root soul was here before. And what I am here to do now is to rectify sparks that were not completed in that first mission of the sparks that are connected to my soul, whether it's through, as you said, keeping the 613 commandments through the three garments of soul, or through these four parts of Torah. Continue, please.
However, those soul sparks that were not rectified are reincarnated to provide further opportunities for rectification.
So the souls are connected of an individual, but they're different. They're connected, they're very connected, intimately connected, but they're different. So what happens if those sparks are not elevated? So this the main soul is like a stem cell, and then there are branch cells that are coming off of that soul. So a new soul then comes into the world to elevate those sparks that had not been elevated before. However, the soul that comes into the world is standing on the back of a giant. All the sparks that were elevated in the previous lifetimes don't go away. So you have the blessing and advantage of all those things. So we're like midgets standing on the back of giants. What happens if those sparks don't get elevated? So then the new soul is a graft, if you will, from the stem cell, the stem soul, and comes back again. So we are not recycled beings. Judaism doesn't believe in this. Not the case. So let's look at this a little more fully. I'm going to show you a slide that'll. Okay, so the mission of the soul is to complete all the 613 commandments, study all four layers of Torah, and reveal our unique portion in the Torah. As well, to elevate our unique portion in the world. So we have two things. We have the rectified sparks, those the mitzvahs that were properly observed, and then we have the unrectified sparks. And there's two different categories. There are the positive commandments that we did not observe, and then there are the negative commandments the Torah says do not, which were violated. So an example of that is don't steal. Okay, simple one. So if that was violated, it was never taken care of. So then that has to be repaired. Now, so in this itself, there's a different levels. So once the sparks are rectified, the soul can ascend to the Garden of Eden. But if there are unrectified sparks, then a spark of the soul must come down to become the foundational part, spark of a new soul. Now, this is a kind of a severe sort of a thing. So there are illnesses, to use an analogy, that you could simply follow the medical protocol and have a speedy and complete recovery. God forbid, there are circumstances where that a person must have an amputation. That limb of the body cannot be repaired through other less drastic steps. So reincarnation would be compared to an amputated limb. It has to come back into the world again. So this is from one of the, it's also from the Rabbi Chaim Vital in his book called Reishis Chochma. Now there's other ways of reincarnation. And this is called partial reincarnation. So in this scenario, a person can have a temporary guest soul, which that soul could be there for the guest soul's sake. In other words, the soul in the previous lifetime couldn't do a certain mitzvah, and so it came back just for this mitzvah and is there temporarily. Or sometimes it could be there to assist the host, this person who is hosting that guest soul. We'll talk about this in a minute. And then there is something called non-human reincarnation, which is very undesirable. After three unsuccessful reincarnations, this is a form of punishment. It's a very undesirable thing. All right. Nick, can I call on you to read, please, text 7A on page 183?
Yes, sir. The concept of Gilgul reincarnation is that a soul requiring further rectification enters the body of a child as it emerges from its mother's womb to serve as the newborn soul. It has no permission to leave that individual until the person's destined day of death.
So let's talk about that. So in other words, when a person is born, that is the soul that was intended to inhabit that body. And one cannot do anything to hasten, God forbid, the time of demise. One must not do that. So that, because that is the mission of that soul, that spark of that soul that was reincarnated to come to this world. Continue.
By contrast, the concept of, I'm sorry? By contrast, the concept of ibur, soul impregnation, is that a soul enters an adult body that is already inhabited by a soul. The person's primary soul received at birth. In this case, the individual is merely impregnated with a guest soul in addition to harboring a primary soul. The individual then carries the extra soul, much as a woman carries a child in her womb.
So the woman, is the mommy who's carrying the baby, is she has her life, and she's the baby is not her life. It's another life which will be born in its due time. So in Gilgul, this spark of the divine soul, of the previous soul that needs rehabilitation or rectification, is temporarily in that other person. Now, it doesn't bother the other person. It doesn't affect the other person negatively. It could affect them positively. We'll soon see. So let's read text 7b also, Nick.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
You're welcome. A soul experiences a bur for one of two reasons. A, the impregnated soul comes to an individual for its own sake. In its previous life, it failed to perform a particular mitzvah and was therefore left lacking. This was the kind of mitzvah that was impossible to perform under the conditions of that lifetime, such as the mitzvah of yibum, chalitza, and the like. It is therefore not obligated to engage in full-scale incarnation, described earlier in this Trieste, for soul impregnation is sufficient.
Let's talk about it. What is the mitzvah of yibum or chalitza? Does anybody know?
That's when, I think it's, you know what? I'm not going to guess. I have an idea, but I'm not.
Remember, we have to keep 613 commandments. Well, I cannot keep the commandments of a woman. A woman doesn't have the commandments of a man. This commandment is when there are brothers who are married and one of the brothers passes away without leaving any children, then the other brother or the oldest brother must marry the sister-in-law in a way called yibum. If they do not find each other compatible, so then they don't have to marry, and the mitzvah of chalitza, which is this type of a special divorce, if you will, takes place. This is rare. So how does a person do this? So then through ibur, the neshama, the soul comes back to do that mitzvah that it couldn't have done in its life. And there's other many mitzvahs like this. You know, I'm not a Kohen. How can I do the mitzvahs of a Kohen? I'm not a Levi. And so on. What I do want to mention at this point, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, 40 cycles ago, it was in the year 1984, established the daily study of Maimonides in three different tracks in order to learn the 613 commandments. So now most of the commandments deal with the temple and the temple service, which we certainly cannot do. But when we study them, so then we are engaging our thought and our dibur when we say them. So we are, those two garments of soul are in fact engaged in fulfilling those commandments. Furthermore, God counts it as though we have done it in many cases. So studying the daily book of mitzvahs, you can find it on Rabbi Yossi's website. You go to the Shul of Bel Air and look under daily study. You'll find the Rambam there, and there are classes in it. And it doesn't take long to go through, but throughout the space of a year, you will have studied with thought and speech the 613 commandments. So, but this person cannot fulfill. So therefore, there comes this process of ibur, which is a temporary, instead of a full-fledged reincarnation. Or B. Nick, did you?
The impregnated soul comes solely to assist an individual, to bring a person additional merit, or to guide an individual in matters of Torah and mitzvot. In this case, the impregnated soul lacks nothing for itself.
It only came back to help the soul that it was impregnated into. Dr. Rebbe brings in Tanya an example of a person who works very, very hard on themselves to control their urges and to do what's the right thing. But they continue to have those urges, and then it doesn't get easier. Just, you know, every time he goes somewhere, it's another urge, another. And so, but in recognition of their efforts to try to become a finer and better person, so then God sends a soul of a tzaddik, a righteous person, to attach to their soul in this way of ibur to elevate them to a level they couldn't come to on their own. Because their soul is not of that ability on its own. This is another reason why there is ibur. So it's an altruistic mission. Now there is another level of reincarnation, which this is non-human reincarnation. Those of you who are not showing your picture, would you like to read? And I'm asking general, but each one is an individual person. So, okay, Donna, would you like to read text number 8, page 185? If not, you could just say pass.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, barely.
Okay. What? I'm sorry. Where did you want me to read?
Page 185, text number 8, please.
Text number 8. When a human soul comes to the world and becomes soiled by sin in the process, it reincarnates in another body to rectify itself. That second life is its first reincarnation. If it fails to rectify itself during that lifetime, it may return in a second reincarnation. If it again fails to find rectification, it may endure a third reincarnation. After that, however, it is no longer provided opportunities for rectification via reincarnation.
This only applies when a person has not rectified anything. They just came into this world and went away from what their purpose is intentionally. If somebody did rectify sparks, so then they don't have to come back again. I mean, I'm sorry, they are not forced to go be reincarnated in something other than a person. Text number 9, Shoshi, please. Page 186.
I'd love to read, but I don't have the book.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, Nadine.
Text 9?
Yes.
Okay. Behold, God does all these twice or thrice with man.
That's a verse from the book of Job, which to us looks like, I don't know. Now let's see how that verse is interpreted.
The limitation of twice or thrice applies with man, meaning that a human soul is not subsequently reincarnated in a human body. Rather, it is forced to wander the planet until it is reincarnated in an inanimate, vegetative, or animal entity. Then, after it has done its penance, there is hope for its future, for God's endless mercies extend to all of his creations.
So we see that from, thank you, we see from this reading that the purpose of being reincarnated into something other than a human is for a cleansing. Well, this is obviously a very different type of cleansing than going to Gehenna, that we spoke about before. This is something very, very different. In fact, it's a very hard thing for the soul. It's extremely painful. Today was the yahrzeit of the Rebbe Rashab. The Rebbe Rashab was the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe. He passed away on the 2nd of Nisan in 1920. He wrote, this is similar to a person who is tied in a sack. Imagine a big burlap sack. A person is tied up in a big burlap sack. So the sack is not, doesn't listen to the person. The person is bound by everything in that, all the qualities of the sack. The same, he says, is true with a person who is reincarnated into something other than a human. The soul, for example, in an animal, that animal does not listen to the soul. So when our soul says, raise your arm is raised. When it says eat, we eat. But when a soul is in an animal, the soul has no influence over the animal whatsoever, none whatsoever. So it's like being tied up in a sack, burlap sack. So meaning that the soul is not revealed in that animal or substance. Rather, it's simply bound like a person who's bound in a sackcloth, like a person who's in prison. And that is called a severe exile. A person in that type of exile can't reveal themselves at all. They're simply a prisoner. So it is a very severe rehabilitation for the soul. I'll tell you some reincarnation stories. I don't know if I should. Okay. Number four, who was I? Jim, would you
Rabbi, can I ask a question? I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Sure.
Is that being, because I guess I would think it would be, but I have no concept of what Gehenna's like. Hopefully I don't go there. Wouldn't that be worse to be stuck in an animal than be cleansed for a period of time?
Oh, much worse. Much worse. Okay, I'll tell you the story. This story was told by the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe. There was a person who was having severe nightmares. His father kept coming back to him. His father was deceased. And he's like screaming at him, why did you do this to me? Why did you do this to me? And he loved his father. And this was just, it was torture. And he didn't know what to do. And they kept recurring. Someone suggested go to the Baal Shem Tov and the Baal Shem Tov will be able to interpret your dream for you. All right. So he goes to the Baal Shem Tov and Baal Shem Tov tells him a story. He said, once there was a person whose soul was reincarnated into a grain of wheat. Now, he was in a field in Poland, Russia, and he was blowing in this, you know, back and forth. There was some beautiful days, and he was ripening, and finally there was came to be the harvest, and he got harvested. And now what's going to happen with him? Is he going to become a piece of bread, or is he going to become who knows what? And he gets sent to a distillery, and he becomes some sort of alcoholic drink. If it was Russia, probably vodka. And now comes the time for bottling after aging or whatever. And he is put into a bottle, not a big bottle, not a small bottle. In the meantime, where does he get sold? To some far out Kretschma, an inn in the middle of nowheres. And he keeps praying that somehow maybe his soul will be elevated. He is having such torture from this. And everybody, every time someone comes in, he sees a Cossack come into the inn. He says, God forbid, no, no, don't take that mind. And the bartender reaches for his bottle, but doesn't take it because they say, no, I want a bigger bottle or a smaller one. One time, there are a couple of Jews who come to the inn. It's a blustery, cold, cold night, blizzards, and it's freezing. And they say, give us some vodka. They give him, not the big one, not small. They finally give him the bottle that soul is in. And they run up to their room with big fur coats, and they pour each other a big cup of vodka. And before anything happens, they drink it down. They didn't say a blessing on the vodka. Baal Shem Tov finishes the story, and the man starts to faint. He was one of those two people, and he realizes that was his father's soul in the grain of wheat, the alcohol. So it gives another dimension to us that we really have to be very respectful of creation and things, and that we certainly don't know what is what and what isn't. But there's divinity in everything, and we have to use the Torah's guidance for how to look at things in a balanced and meaningful way. So all of our souls are reincarnations. Now, there aren't any new souls in our generation. Once all the sparks have been elevated, so then we will enter the Messianic age. So the question might be asked, well, who was I and what is my mission? Why am I here? I'm here because I need to come back. Why am I here? So on page 187, text number 10, Jim, would you like to read?
Sure. It is impossible to deduce or intuit whether one possesses a reincarnated soul or not, unless one is the recipient of a mystical communication in this regard. You may wonder, how then will we know the purpose for which we entered this world, which mitzvah we must scrupulously perform, or which transgression we must especially avoid? The answers are naturally ingrained in us. We experience natural affinity and longing to perform a certain mitzvah when that mitzvah is critical to our present incarnation.
Okay, so you said, you said something very important here.
I did?
Yes. In fact, I would underline those words. Okay. We experience a natural affinity or longing to do a certain mitzvah. There's something inside of us that moves us for that mitzvah. We're very much moved to that mitzvah when that mitzvah is critical to our present incarnation. I know of a woman who grew up very, very secularly. It was in a different country, in fact. And she came to an evening, and she befriended a Chabad shliach, his wife, and she heard about a mitzvah that absolutely touched her. It was a mitzvah of mikveh, of family purity. And it drew her, it was so powerful. We, each one of us, there are certain mitzvahs that we're very inclined to, we're connected with. Some people, they love to give tzedakah. That's for them, it's a wonderful thing. They go on.
Okay. Or our inclination strives especially hard to entice us to commit a particular sin, for it is the very same sin in which we blundered during our previous life.
Correct. So in other words, we have a hard time staying away from that thing. It really, really is hard for us. Or we're talking about tzedakah before. As I said, some people it's very, very easy, and or they love tzedakah. They love to give. Some people, you know the story of Jack Benny, right? Jack Benny, you're young, Nick. Do you know who Jack Benny was? Okay. So one time Jack Benny was mugged, and a thief came to him and stuck his pistol in his side and said, "Your money or your life?" Jack didn't say anything. He jabbed it in harder. "Your money or your life?" Jack says, I'm thinking. Some people, money is my life. You can have my life, but not my money. And other people, it goes very easy. That which is very hard for us, whatever the mitzvah is, that means it's the most important for us. Or that which is, we have a natural, strong affinity, that mitzvah is very important for us. Or those sins which are very hard for us not to do, that means it's very important. That's why we're back here. That's how we have an indication why we are here. It's impossible to know our incarnation history. We're not given that in any way, and God does not want us to have it except in this way. So in other words, we don't have a memory. We do not have a memory why we were here before, of who we were before. And we certainly don't have the knowledge of why we're here now, unless a tzaddik tells us, and that happens occasionally. So the soul assumes a new body in reincarnation, and it also has a new personality because it's a branch of the previous soul that came back to fix something from the previous lifetime, but it's not the same soul. Fabulous letter. It's a long read. Eloise, would you like to do it? It's on page 188, text 11.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I am replying to your letter in which you inform me that you accepted and are implementing my directives regarding Torah study classes and giving charity. But as far as the situation at home is concerned, your marital harmony appears only superficially to have improved, while the underlying reality remains unsatisfactory. I already told you in my previous letter that it would be challenging. You are meant to find it difficult, for the success of your life's mission hinges upon your sincere efforts toward marital harmony. Our mystical teachings reveal that rare individuals are born in are born with original souls. The rest of us are reincarnations. We return to complete the fulfillment of the mitzvah that we missed in previous lifetimes. Certainly we are obligated in all of the mitzvah in every lifetime, but the specific mitzvah we omitted in earlier incarnations are critical to the recidification of our souls and the recidification of this world. Using the evil inclination as a guide, we can identify the mitzvah that determine the outcome of our life's mission. Our inclination opposes a mitzvah that we finalized in previous lifetimes, but only to the degree necessary to create free choice between good and evil. By contrast, it unleashes a fierce storm of opposition with countless hurdles and challenges when we approach a mitzvah that we failed to fulfill in previous incarnations. Therefore, your many hurdles to marital harmony reveal its indispensability to your recidification. Do whatever it takes to achieve harmony.
Sorry. So what is the Rebbe telling this woman here in this letter? No?
Harmony in her marriage is very important, and they need to work on that.
That's not a very convincing argument if I'm not interested.
Well, you can use your inclination to figure out what mitzvot you're supposed to be doing. And the fact that you're struggling means you need to address the situation because it's actually going to be a tool to help you.
So in other words, that's why the soul came back into this world. It doesn't mean that every time people have to live, especially if there's abuse and it's, you know, dangerous and so on and so forth, that's then it's not a, and they need to speak with proper proper therapist and to work through, figure out what is the right approach to speak to a rabbi. But here, what the rabbi is saying there is, perhaps this is why you're reincarnated. So that means she has to live with an untenable situation? Or does it mean it gives a different perspective of how important it is to try to do everything to make it work well? I think that's what the Rebbe is saying here. That this is deeply important for her soul. So, Alex, would you like to read page 190, lesson, left text 12?
Rebbe, come up again. Again, page 190, lesson. So if you could look at, so hang on a second with me. Page 190, 12, lesson 12.
Yes.
From the moment that God instructed our forefather Abraham to go from your land, following which stated Abraham kept traveling for the southward, the mystical process of rectification of divine spark was launched. Secondly, by decree of divine providence, individuals travel to the location in which the divine spark that the specific individuals must rectify by their redemption. Send individuals with spiritual vision perceive the location in which their divine sparks await their engagement, and they take the initiative to journey into those locations. The rest of us are left in the hands of the primary cause, behind all causes and the ultimate reason behind all reasons gather. It traces countless apparent causes and circumstances to bring specific individuals to the location in which their predestined service or rectification is required.
And this is what I told you before. This is the tzaddikim go directly to the place that's waiting their service to elevate the sparks, but the rest of us, we are led there. So in figure 5.2 on page 191, here are some strong clues by which we can identify our mission in this world, our strengths and our passions, our weaknesses and our struggles, and our circumstances. So this brings us to a larger picture. Larry, please reach for us on page 192.
A larger picture. Toward the start of this session, there was an exercise 5.1 designed to clarify current thoughts and feelings about reincarnation. At this point, having reviewed the above materials, it is possible to examine the earlier responses and determine their accuracy. Undoubtedly, a primary reincarnation phobia, the fear of discovering that we are truly someone else, simply reincarnated, will have melted before the Kabbalistic clarity that does not deny us our personal identity. On the contrary, the Kabbalistic concept of reincarnation enhances our personal identity by providing us a unique purpose and meaning, an exclusive role to play within the universal human mission. This approach provides significant purpose and meaning, which is essential to emotional well-being. Lastly, as humanity's collective mission rapidly approaches its glorious conclusion, the spiritual spotlight shines with additional focus on a particular segment of the population. These are souls who are destined to play an especially important role in scoring humanity's final game-winning goal.
All right, please go back to exercise 5.1. What page is that?
Yes, 175.
All right, now let's go back and see what, after we've learned all this, look at our answers. Okay, belief in reincarnation is basic to Judaism. True or false?
False.
Okay, whoever says true, raise your hand. Whoever says false, raise your hand. Okay. That may be a trick question. Because we say something is basic, there are 13 principles of faith. Those are the basic principles. So this is not on that level basic, but it is very, very much a part of Judaism. So yes, it is very much a part of Judaism. Number two, in the Jewish view, reincarnation means that a soul that inhabited one body returns to inhabit another. True or false?
True.
False.
I think it's false.
It's true and false. It's not the whole soul, it's a spark of that soul.
This is the most Jewish test in the history of mankind. You're right, but you're absolutely wrong. Do it again.
All right. Number three, assume a human soul can be reincarnated in a non-human entity such as an animal or plant. True or false? True.
True.
Yes. A reincarnated soul does not have its own identity, but shares its identity with someone else who lived in a previous lifetime. True or false?
True.
False. They completely have a new identity. They are a spark of the previous soul, but they have a new identity. All right. The purpose of five, the purpose of doing good in one's current lifetime is to be reincarnated as a person of higher status in the future reincarnation. True or false?
True.
False. We don't want to come back here again. We want to have completed our mission and be in heaven. All right. And number six, a soul is reincarnated as a penalty for sins committed in a prior lifetime. It's not a penalty. It's a rehabilitation to complete those sparks that were not yet done. And seven, sure. Most souls today are reincarnations. True or false?
True.
Yes, good. All right, so show you the slide.
So, Rabbi, when I was really bad when I was a boy and my father actually had to hit me with a belt a couple times, which I totally deserved, he was really rehabbing me. He wasn't really punishing me, right? I'm just kidding. I'm just joking.
You know,
it worked.
You know what? King Solomon said, how do you say it in English? A person, what's the way in English? Spare the rod, spoil the child. He loved you. That's why he did it to you.
I know. And I really deserved it. I'm not going to tell you what I did, but it was completely, I probably got off easy.
This is not a confessional. I also have, okay. Hold on.
Ustav shifto so nebno.
Okay. So, reincarnation enhances our personal identity by providing a unique purpose. It augments mission with our previous good deeds because we are building, we're standing on top of what came before. That's a pathway to realizing God's master plan, and it provides a role within the general human mission. We have our piece that's important to add to it. So it's God's master plan here. How many have heard of Viktor Frankl?
Frankl,
a psychiatrist. Mm. He was taken to the camps. Mm. He was analyzing the attitudes of the Jewish people who were suffering so badly there. And he came up with a whole new form of psychiatry called logotherapy. And the way he described this was that when people were suffering the barbaric, terrible things that happened in the camp, had a mission, they were able to get through it. They were mission focused. They were able to get through even the most severe, terrible things that happened. So let's read this piece, 193, Linda, from Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning.
Okay. Thus it can be seen that mental health is based on a certain degree of tension, tension between what has already achieved and what one still ought to accomplish, or the gap between what one is and what one should become.
And meaning that mental health is on the tension of who I am and who I need to be is positive, Viktor Frankl is saying.
Okay. Such a tension.
I have already accomplished everything and that's it. Okay, such a tension.
Okay. Such attention is inherent in the human being and therefore is indispensable to mental well-being. We should not then be hesitant about challenging man with a potential meaning for him to fulfill. It is only thus that we will evoke his will to meaning from its state of latency.
So now this brings us to that when we look at this and we have determination to obtain a goal and we find the strength to overcome obstacles, we have a changed attitude towards our circumstances, even though the circumstances would be described as why, me, what, what's this all about, who needs it? Then we find the potential, the positive within the suffering, and then we seize every moment because that's a part of our mission. So that brings us to an attitude of determination and strength, attitude and resilience, and personal responsibility. So we're going to conclude with something that the Arizal tells us. Again, the Arizal from Tzfat, the mystic major teacher of the Kabbalah, the text number 14. Hold on here. Colin, okay, wait, Deborah, sorry. This is from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Yeah, you're on mute. Wait, Deborah, you're on mute. Thank you.
Jewish women and girls, number text 14, you said?
Yes, yes.
Jewish women and girls play an essential role in the highly critical mission of bringing about the true and complete redemption. The women played an indispensable role in our exodus from Egypt. Indeed, our sages state that our ancestors were redeemed from Egypt in the merit of the deeds of the righteous women. As we have discussed repeatedly, they fulfill this role in each subsequent generation. This is especially true of our present time, for we are the reincarnation of the generation that left Egypt.
Wow.
Indeed, we clearly observe that Jewish women and girls are naturally predisposed far more readily than the menfolk to the idea of immediately leaving the exile. Less effort is required to convince them that we must leave this exile already than is required to inspire the men.
So the holiday of Passover is coming up, which is the leaving of the exile of Egypt, the redemption, which that was the first exile and redemption. And we are the souls, and especially the women of our generation, are the leaders that in their merit, we will go out of this exile to the coming of Mashiach. Okay, let's do an exercise 5.2 on page 195. I want you all to please, from all the different ideas that we spoke about today, what was a point that resonated with you the most? And then identify a mitzvah to which you feel a strong connection. The one that might constitute the reason your soul re-entered the world. And if you don't have time for this now, because I've already extended beyond 9 o'clock, it's 9:02. But please do this. This is the point of the whole lesson today. All right, we're going to read now the key points. Colin, please, number one on page 196.
And various ideas offered in today's lesson support the point that resonates with you.
Okay, Sid? Sid, you have to unmute. You have to unmute, Sid.
Okay, I unmuted. The 600,000 primary souls were each given a part of the world to perfect through the fulfillment of the 613 mitzvot. When a soul accomplishes its mission, it itself also gains rectification and elevation.
Okay, Joanne, please.
Every root soul must also study each of the Torah's four layers of teaching and uncover its unique part in Torah.
Great. Lou? Lou.
Few, if any, of the original souls completed all 613 mitzvot, nor the required study during their original lifetimes. Reincarnation provides souls with additional opportunities to complete their missions and the rectification of the world and themselves.
Okay. Mike?
Okay, when a person dies, all the refined elements of their soul return to heaven. A new soul built from the elements that were left unrectified is then grafted from the stem soul and returned to this world.
Yeah, very good. Okay, done.
Our souls are reincarnations, but it is impossible to be conscious of or to accurately sense the experiences of our previous lifetimes.
Nick, number 7.
Clues as to the nature of our soul's unique task in this world can be gleaned from A, our strengths and passions, B, our weaknesses and struggles, and C, our unique life circumstances.
Okay, Shoshi, number 8, please.
I'm sorry, I don't have a book.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Nadine, do you have?
Yes. The Kabbalistic view of reincarnation does not deny us our personal identity. Each of us is a complete and unique individual who is simultaneously and integrally linked to a far greater reality. Reincarnation ascribes greater importance to our existence and provides each of us a unique role within the overall human mission.
Great. So, please do that final exercise. Thank you all for coming. And we pray that Alter Chaim Ben Bela, the father-in-law of Yossi, the father of Esti, has a speedy and complete recovery. And thank you for allowing me to be here this week. Next week is going to be the climax of this journey of the soul, an amazing lesson. So have a good evening. And by the way, I want to commend your attention the appendix in the back of this lesson, some tremendous reads over there. Any questions?
Yes, I put a question in the chat box.
Let's see, hold on. Okay, hold on. I'm going to see. You have the let me explain it as I understand the question, Joanne.
Okay.
The soul that is being reincarnated are particular sparks of the root soul, which have to be elevated. And so it's not, if it's a question of the number, I don't know that answer, but it's from that root soul. It's not from somebody else's soul. Does that help?
So a person has one root soul and only that soul reincarnates itself to a new life. So there's only one soul that enters that new person. You couldn't yes. have me well, and
I'll,
you.
I'll give you an example. From the root soul, you have the branches, there are 600,000 root souls. But let's say of that root soul, there are 600,000 branches in it itself. So each one of those branches, each one of those sparks of that original soul need to be elevated and rectified. So if in the root soul's life, it didn't complete all the mitzvahs, it didn't fulfill it. So then sparks of it will come back into another body to fulfill that. Now, let's say that there were several times that there was a reincarnation. So all of those will come back in a resurrection of the dead as separate persons with separate personalities, even though they're connected by that root soul. With me?
Okay, so basically in looking at it as a tree, it's just that tree and all its branches and new personalities and so on. It's not two trees that can enter the same reincarnation.
That's absolutely correct.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. So in other words, we're not recycled. There are sparks of our initial soul that for whatever reason, the previous life that didn't complete, we'll come back to this world too. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyone else?
I do have one question, Rabbi. It's about a statement on page 177.
Okay.
So I just thought, when it was discussing it all began with one master soul, the soul of Adam, which included the future souls, etc. And it was divided and it kept dividing. Could this be a reason why historically in the past people lived hundreds of years? And then as souls were being divided, it actually had less energy or something. And that's why they didn't live as long. I just thought maybe that's a concept. It's possible.
Interesting question.
Yeah, very. The way I understand it is every moment of life is a very precious gift. Because as we learned last time, in heaven, you can't do mitzvahs. So to explain it with just a drop of chassidus, God is infinitely good. So he gives us an opportunity to connect with him infinitely. Now imagine you go to the Reliance Stadium and you know, you're waiting for the game to begin and everything's all exciting and it's night. And all of a sudden they turn on huge amount of lights, so much light that you close your eyes and you can't look, it'll blind you. When we do a mitzvah, there's so much spiritual light that comes out that it's infinite. It literally would blow us out of existence. Why? Because the word mitzvah in Hebrew means tzavs of the Hebrew. It means a direct connection to the commander of the mitzvah, which is God. So when a person gives even a penny to tzedakah, when a person puts on tefillin or a kosher mezuzah, any of these mitzvahs, 613 mitzvahs, it's an infinite connection. You can't do those mitzvahs in the Garden of Eden because we have a sense of God there. We're able to experience a glimmer of his presence. And if you were to turn on that whole light, it would blow us out of existence. But in this world, we have a physical body and we don't experience anything. If you see somebody who says, oh, I see God, you tell them, I'm taking you to the psychiatrist or the rabbi, something's wrong here. You could see God in your mind's eye, you could see the acts of God, you could have fear of God and love of God, but you have to think about it. It's not, you cannot, with our physical eyes, as Yiddish says the phrase, mit fleshike egen zeben fleshiks, with flesh eyes, you see flesh. You see the physical things. That because of that, we have a great advantage. I can connect directly with the infinite God because I can't feel it. But when does that reward come? We see the reward of a mitzvah is in the Garden of Eden. Then every single time we went to shul, every single time we learned, every single time we did something good, every time we held ourselves back from what we really wanted to do and didn't do it because we shouldn't, we see this enormous thing, but we don't see the full, the total light. That'll happen only after the resurrection of the dead. But so our bodies are really important. I mean, really important. And so elevating those sparks and connecting with our mission in this context, so the concept of reincarnation makes it all the more compelling.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.